Welcome to Sales Talk for CEOs. I'm glad you're here. I'll be interviewing CEOs who have successfully scaled their B2B sales organization. In each episode, I'll start by uncovering the sales background of each CEO, dig into the strategies they use to build their sales organization, and wrap it up with what the future holds. We'll cover the good, the bad, and the ugly of scaling a sales organization. I'm your host, Alice Hyman. Welcome to Sales Talk for CEOs. I'm Alice Hyman, and today my guest, Chris Rudigroff, is here with us from one of my favorite companies, Sendoso. Super excited to have you here, Chris.
Thank you so much, Alice. I'm really excited to be here too.
I am really excited about what Sendoso is doing. And I know you guys just got a big round of funding as well. Woo-hoo! Yeah. That was so exciting to see that all over social media. For all our listeners out there who haven't heard of Sendoso, which I find it hard to believe because you guys do such a good job out there in social media land, tell them what Sendoso does.
Yes. So Sendoso is a sending platform that helps other companies send out personalized gifts, direct mail, swag, handwritten notes, you name it, we can send it. And it's a mix of software that integrates into your tech stack and makes it really easy to have teams and budgets and analytics, mixed with a marketplace of all the different gifts you could ever want to send out, and then all the fulfillment behind the scenes.
Everybody out there who is prospecting right now and trying to keep customers engaged throughout the entire sales process and beyond, Sendoso is amazing. I use it myself. Some of my clients are using it, and it's really making a difference because instead of just another email and or just another call, hey, just checking in, what they're getting is something fun. They get to open a package. They get to find something fun inside and then think of the person who sent it to them. And so it is really an engaging way to continue developing relationships with people. So I do just really love what you guys are doing out there.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's been a really fun journey the last 5 years.
Yeah, so 5 years in and doing amazing. But let's go back to the time when you started the company with Braden and actually tell us what you were doing just before you started the company and what on earth possessed the two of you to start a company.
Yeah, so before starting Sendoso, I was an account executive at a company called Talkdesk. And before that, I was an account executive at a few other companies. So I spent about 8 years in individual contributor roles for high-tech SaaS software companies. And while I was at Talkdesk, a couple of things happened. One is, you know, as you alluded to, trying to find more creative ways to engage with prospects, keep the sales process going without the, hey, just checking in. I found myself really sending out, quirky gifts that I'd find online. I'd grab swag out of our swag closet from the marketing team. I'd write handwritten notes. I'd pack boxes. I'd go to Starbucks and get gift cards, all these different things. And it worked really, really well. It was just manual, time consuming. I think marketing would always yell at me for like grabbing stuff without telling them. I'd have these, tracking these clicking into these links for FedEx, trying to figure out, is it delivered? Is it delivered? And so after all of that, it really, had an aha moment of like, why can't I just click a button inside of Salesforce and send something out? And that was really the precipice for getting started with Sendoso.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do know the best reps out there are always looking for creative ways to do things. And I've written a few blogs about all these, of course, mentioning Sendoso as one of the things that you can do. And a good friend of mine, I think you might know him, Stu Heineke.
Oh, yeah.
He wrote a book called How to Get a Meeting with Anyone. And he talks about creative ways. And his is sending something also, although he's, a famous cartoonist, so he can draw a cartoon and put it on a big board and send it in and get a lot of attention with that. But the fact of the matter is that any sales rep can be more creative using something like Sendoso, which is really awesome.
To reiterate, I think creativity is one of those skill sets or soft skills that, is underutilized or undervalued. And so I think as, you know, we see the next decade of salespeople where, you know, you add creativity to your resume or you want to be more creative. And I think that's going to be a skill set that stands out in the pack.
100%. And I don't think it's something we interview for. You know, we mostly interview for skills and then culture fit. We fail to interview for mindset and we fail to interview for creativity.
Yeah.
And I think creativity is something all of you CEOs out there listening, make sure your sales leaders are interviewing for creativity. So you could say something like, let's say you've been trying to get into this account for a long time and, you know, you haven't made any headway. What could you do other than send an email or make another phone call and see what the rep comes up with? That simple question, you know, will tell you whether they're like LinkedIn. Okay, well, that's good. Anything else?
Yeah.
You know, and I like those reps who have done crazy things, gone to amazing lengths, you know, like you were doing as a sales rep yourself to try to get these appointments, which is amazing. All right. So you're at this company. You think, why can't I just push a button and send this stuff to somebody? So what did you do?
Yeah. So I did a little bit of research and asked friends, hey, would you use a platform to send stuff out? I did some other research on the industry and saw that there was hundreds of billions actually being spent already on corporate gifting and swag. And so it was really one of those things that a lot of people were doing, but it was siloed, offline, maybe spreadsheet driven. And so there was already a lot of people doing it. It just didn't have modern software to make it easy to integrate it into your workflows, to track it. And so that data point was just another aha moment that contributed to me saying, hey, like, we need to do something about this.
Okay. And so now what did you do? Call Braden and go, hey, I got this idea.
Yeah. So it actually, we were grabbing some beers, talking about different, you know, sales ideas. And so we were both AEs before Sendoso. And the first topic was really like, hey, how can we send Starbucks gift cards through Salesforce? And so, you know, Sendoso 1.0 was actually coffeesender.com. And it was a Salesforce app that you could send a Starbucks gift card. And that was kind of our first foray into, you know, starting the company. It was a little bit easier of a, you know, idea to bite off on. And so we got that started, invested our own money and started to see really hundreds of thousands of dollars being spent like overnight on sending out Starbucks gift cards. And so that gave us some great inspiration to, as kind of a starting side project, to say, hey, let's quit our jobs. Let's go all in. You know, creating the fulfillment and, you know, warehousing was a lot of work. So we said, hey, let's spend the next 9 months really figuring out the software platform mixed with the logistics backend and then the supply chain for the marketplace. And so all of that, we then worked our butts off and was able to launch about 9 months after that.
Wow, that's a lot of work. The logistics, I think, is the biggest thing, because sending a gift card electronically, right? Yep. Or even sending it so that it gets mailed. I mean, Starbucks will do that for you, you know. So, but then when you start thinking about assembling items together into a package that has a bow on it or whatever, mm-hmm. and sending that out, that's a lot of logistics to figure out. So you guys did that in 9 months?
Yeah. And then it was just from there, I think that's really when we instantly started selling the product. It was probably actually about a month before we went live. We started, you know, selling the product through slide decks, and we were getting customers signing up, like signing contracts before even seeing the product. And it was really proof that we just, you know, we knew that there was product market fit, and we knew we were like right time, right place.
Wow. And so in the beginning, you and Braden were doing the selling. You were the ones showing the decks to people and saying, hey, would you do this? Do you want to buy this? And getting everybody signed up.
Yeah. So we both were doing sales. Meanwhile, I think on the nights or after sales hours, I would be working on product engineering and some of the other things to get the product built. But because of our background, we said, hey, let's double down on sales. And there's parts where he would sell a customer and I would be like onboarding them as customer success and vice versa. And so, you know, we kind of scrappy in the early days until we really decided that we needed to start hiring people to grow the go-to-market motion.
So when was that? About how far in were you? And kind of was there a magic moment when you two looked at each other and said, man, we got to get some salespeople in here?
Yeah. So first was we need to get some customer success people in. So we hired two customer success people like ASAP to keep up with the demand that we were generating from the sales side. And so that was, you know, really helpful. And when we then decided was that, okay, Braden and I, we were so passionate. We were the founders. We were ex-salespeople. We really realized, like, is this real demand or is this just our passion coming through and we can, you know, sell on the founder's story? And so we said to really prove go-to-market fit that we could scale this out, you know, talk to investors that this was a scalable business, we needed to get, you know, strangers or AEs coming in or SDRs to really prove out what I call go-to-market fit, which is really the next stage, which is can you create a repeatable sales process, whether it's full cycle sales or whether it's SDR to AE sales. And so that was really the next milestone that we had to figure out. And that's where we went to hire salespeople.
Yeah. So you started hiring salespeople. Now I'm sure the division of labor changes, right? From the day you start and all the way through till even today, right? Mm-hmm. That you do different things and now you're wearing the CEO hat and doing lots of different things. So you hired a couple of salespeople. How did that work out? How did that go?
Yeah. So it actually worked out great. Our first two salespeople are still with us today. One is in sales leadership. The other is in account management leadership. Nice. So I think we lucked out there. And, you know, that being said, there's other sales hires thereafter that aren't with us today. But we really lucked out with our first two salespeople who I worked with previously and had some personal relations with. Have been just an immense part of our success.
And what were some of the challenges when you first started shifting from you and Braden selling, right? To now we got to make sure other people can do it as well as we did, or even better than we did, right? So you can prove to investors, hey, this is scalable. We've trained other salespeople to do it and they're doing great. So what were some of the challenges or things that you bumped into as you were trying to do that?
Yeah. So one was making sure that we could drive, you know, meetings for these salespeople when they came in. I think Braden and I were, you know, well-connected, you know, friends, colleagues, you know, we were able to get to 50 customers pretty quickly just through like network selling and, you know, word of mouth selling.
And well, so, and you also have the titles, like we're the founders, right? So people want to talk to you.
Exactly. But so what we really wanted to do was ensure these first two salespeople's success and they're not coming in twiddling their thumbs or they're not having to spend too much time outbounding. And so that's really where we immediately invested in a marketer to help drive inbound demand, as well as we said, hey, we need to figure out our SDR motion. And so we hired two SDRs to then come in and help set up meetings. And so that was kind of in conjunction with the two AE hires. And we really wanted to figure out if we could build an SDR function in conjunction with an AE function. And one of the learnings there was, you know, we wanted to perfect it. And we were in San Francisco. So we all sat in the same office. This was, you know, pre-COVID days, about 3.5, maybe 4 years ago. And we quickly realized that the cost of talent, though, in San Francisco was quite high for SDRs and was really only one, you know, pond to fish in for talent. And so we actually, after getting to about, you know, hiring some more people, growing out the SDR team a little bit more, we had ended up saying halt all hiring in San Francisco when we opened up an office in Scottsdale, Arizona, and moved some of the SDRs there and then continued to hire in that area.
Yeah. So I think that is a challenge, especially for startups that are bootstrapping, is we need people, but you may be in a big city where people are very expensive, right? So you have to look to other places and then you may feel like you lose a little control because they're not right there sitting in the same office with you.
Yep. Very correct. And so we had to really figure out how do we grow the company with two remote offices. We had a third office that we had offshore for our development team too. So we really had to figure out how do we scale our culture? And then how do we, you know, hire and inspire salespeople that we're not meeting with the founders every day? And so how do we build that team culture? So it was really important for us to hire leadership that we could then scale the team in that office too.
What do you think? think were some of the keys to you building the culture that you wanted? Because you guys do have a remarkable culture. I know many of the people that work for you, and not only are they fun, but you know, they really have that feeling that it's like that team feeling, and you built that. So in the early days and then kind of moving up till now, what kinds of things did you do as you brought on more salespeople and more customer success and all of the other functions that you needed? How'd you drive that culture?
Yeah. So one thing you mentioned, fun, is something that we've lucked out that our product offering is very fun. Our customers tell us fun stories. And so it's hard not to have fun as the company, kind of the product oozes into our company culture. So we kind of lucked out on that and we've embraced that and have tried to create a fun, you know, quirky brand on social media that attracts people in that want to have fun. So fun was, you know, one of the words that I would say describes our company culture. Above and beyond that, though, I think, you know, and I think it stems from the top two and me, is we've really tried to create a culture where it's a, you know, a one team, one dream. And, you know, the CEO is not too cool for school. He's in the trenches working with everyone else. So I still, you know, I'm working with their SDRs, working with their AEs, working with their team, co-selling. And so they really see that everyone's in this to win this. And, you know, I'll break into a new account even in today or, you know, earlier today, it's end of quarter. I'm helping send some final emails, getting deals across the finish line, doing some exec to exec, you know, meetings and phone calls and Sendosoing. So I think that's been a great part of our culture in that it's very collaborative and everyone, even the executives, is working just as hard as everyone else. And so that's been a really a key win to our success. And I think that in order to embrace that and do that well, you have to be willing to, you know, meet with SDRs pretty frequently, show up, show FaceTime, you know, I'm Slacking with them. And so it's not just saying it, it's proving it and doing it in the actions.
Yeah, really just being there and showing up. I love that. And then also part of your role, you know, as CEOs and founders, our role changes, right? So from the beginning till 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, your role is going to change in sales throughout. Your complete role is going to change, but you started off doing some of the selling. Then you hired some salespeople and someone managed those people. You mentioned to me earlier that Braden was managing them and you were focused on other things and you grew it up into that, right? So now tell us a little about your role now in sales versus what it was when you and Braden were doing all the selling. It sounds like you just mentioned, for example, one thing, doing some exec to exec, you know, relationship building, but how has your role in sales changed and what role do you play now today?
Yeah. So I'd say my role in sales is pretty dynamic and I'm doing a bunch of different things that might help in the sales process. So whether it's using my advisor and investor and executive connections or just my network to still help break into accounts. So I'm still doing some of that high level, trying to break into new accounts, helping the team from a prospecting side. I try to do a lot of thought leadership in terms of creating content and creating awareness for Sendoso. So I think that indirectly is driving leads into our funnel. I'm also going on the road or virtually on the road, you could say, this year. I met with about 100 customers this year. And so while they're current customers, you know, while they change jobs and then want to sign up with us again, or whether I'm helping the account management sales team expand these accounts, you know, meeting with customers, sharing our vision, sharing best practices, hearing what their feedback is, has really helped the sales team from indirectly from when these champions, you know, switch companies and want to bring us back in, or directly for the account expansion opportunities. And then I think lastly, my sales team brings me into deals, not to talk sales, but to talk more or less, you know, what's the vision for what we're doing? What are some thought leadership areas and what's our roadmap? Other ways for me to engage with other buyers on the buying committee. And so I find myself talking to prospects pretty often too.
Yeah. So letting the sellers do their job and then position you properly.
Yes.
To come in at the right time with the right people And more importantly, say the right things, right? So they don't need you to do their sales job for them. Correct. They need you to come in with some other topics, some ideas, some vision, and that roadmap, like you mentioned. And I love that your sales team is using you that way. Very wise, very wise. So very good. And I think that right now, again, in the market, we are all looking for creative ways. Mm-hmm. And the senior executives of companies oftentimes are kind of stuck in the how we did it 5 years ago. And some of them, unfortunately, are even stuck in the sort of how we did it 10 or 20 mm-hmm. years ago. And those things don't work anymore.
Yeah.
So for you as the CEO to be able to come in with some thought leadership and say, hey, you know, this is not the way sales works anymore. This is the way it works better. Let's go to the way that's better instead of just sending more emails, more LinkedIn, more, you know, calls where you're not actually talking to anybody. It's not working. We have something better and creative, and you're teaching them what modern selling is and sharing how to do it.
Exactly.
I love that.
Yeah. And oftentimes too, I'll try to bring along customers so that there's peer-to-peer conversations too, or create other ways to build this community of people that are kind of the modern sellers or our modern sales leaders that are sharing in their social circles. And so I think that's driven to a lot of our success as we really try to empower our customers to showcase their success and really talk about how they've seen their usage of Sendoso. And I love highlighting customer stories or using those customer stories on the road. So
right. Oh, I love that. I think that's excellent. When customers will come in and, you know, just brag about how great you are. It's wonderful. But I also think it's important because what the customers can do is say, this is how we use it and how it's working for us. Mm-hmm. And look, no one's telling anyone to stop using the phone or email or LinkedIn. You absolutely need to use those 100%. In conjunction with, right, Sendoso. So you do need to know where does it fit. And if you're doing some kind of cadence through one of those lovely tools that we have out there today to do that through, then you do need to know, well, do we start with a phone call and then do an email and then send a gift from Sendoso? What's working best for others like us? People want to know that when your customers can share that.
Yes.
It's amazing.
Yeah. And I think that brings up a great point, which is, you know, really figuring out when to use it and that it's not the, you know, golden bullet that you just send out a gazillion things and you can go to sleep and you'll get a gazillion dollars right. coming in. It's like, I think the best sellers and the best, you know, leaders are, you know, it's a bit of an art and a science where yes. you're testing things out. When do I send? When do I call? When do I email? And you're testing and reiterating and you know, you're leaving that time for creativity and sending stuff that really, you know, you can automate other things and we can automate some of the hard stuff of packing boxes, tracking, shipping and all that. But we give you more time in your day back to think about creativity, think about the buying process and thinking about what's the right message at the right time to the right person. So
absolutely. I love that. So thinking about how your sales team was when you started, which was the two of you, right, to where it is now, tell us, what does your sales organization look like today, your go-to-market organization, your marketing, your sales, your customer success? What does that whole thing look like for Sendoso today?
Yeah, so we have probably roughly about 150-ish people in our go-to-market team now. Wow. So our SDR org's approaching 50. We've got a good ratio of SDRs to AEs. We even have some kind of SDRs that are working our expansion accounts for our account management team.
Nice.
So we've you know, split out that. We're still focused on a kind of a SMB mid-market enterprise model, and it's still a round robin with named account model. So we're not you know, overall, we're about 500 employees, but we're still not territory based yet. We're still focused on kind of these named accounts and round robin for our go-to-market team.
I like that approach, though. And I love that you've built teams. It's like, yeah, SDRs, we're going to, you know, working with AEs, working with customer success, and we work together on these large accounts. Once we land them, we work together to expand them. Loving that. And I think that's something that everyone really needs to consider. people should not just disappear from a customer's life. You know, they should be around and then know the customer knows they're available and they're part of a team who's helping lift everybody up, which is, you know, it does take a team these days, especially for these really large accounts to do that.
Exactly. Yeah. And we really think about it as the account team. So when we, you know, close a new customer, we introduce the account team. Yes. And on that first introduction call, even the AE will want to show some face time, introduce and welcome the new customer. And I think the best AEs are doing good jobs of checking in with current customers a couple months after so that they can continue to build rapport, whether that person eventually switches companies or needs a referral. You know, I used to love doing that when I was in sales. And another good use case for Sendoso, where you can you know, send a current customer a little thank you gift or a little check-in gift as the time goes on in that relationship.
Absolutely. I love that. I want to just reiterate that sending gifts to current customers, right, is just as important as sending them to prospects and just the right timing on that or the right wording and things like that. But I always tell people, this is kind of my little secret, don't send anything during the eating season. If you're in the food business, you know, the eating season is from November to after New Year's, right? That's when everybody's eating a lot. We're eating and drinking a lot. So don't send stuff during that time because it gets lost in the sauce. Everybody sends a gift for the holidays. Yeah. So I'll tell you my big secret. I like 4th of July and Halloween because nobody sends a gift on 4th of July or Halloween.
I love that. We also see a lot of our customers getting creative with these national days, like, you know, National Wine Day or National. We did a cool campaign last year, which was National Dog Day, and sent out a bunch of stuff around dogs and pets. And I think it's you can take advantage of real holidays or these holidays, but it's still just something that people can rally behind, something that people can drive creativity from, and allows you to stand out from just the you know, like you said, the usual holiday gifts.
And any day can be We Love Our Customers Day. Any day, right? So good thinking on that. I also want to go back to something else you said. You said that you still do named accounts versus territories. And I think that is a good approach. I don't know, especially in the world today, whether it ever makes sense to go back to territories. I've been rethinking that with a lot of my clients. So I'm curious, because as you go forward now from where we are today, you guys are growing tremendously. You got that big infusion of cash, which is going to really help propel your growth. Exciting. Where do you see it going? You know, why might it be better to stay with named accounts? And the way that people buy is changing a little bit. How are you guys shifting? And what do you see coming in the future for your sales organization?
Yeah, so I think we plan to stay with named accounts. And I think the challenging thing with territories now is, while the headquarters of a company can still stay in, say, San Francisco, your contact could be anywhere now. And so I think in the decades ago where territories were first established, it was there so that, you know, the field rep in the field could go make in-person visits because it was assumed that everyone was in the HQ. And so everyone, no flying, just driving, you'd save on, you know, travel costs. So I think that, you know, named accounts will probably be even more common because you'll see people spread out everywhere. And, you know, it's a way that you can, you know, you can build rapport from everywhere. And I think we've even seen that where field reps during the pandemic have gone inside and have used Sendoso more than ever to build that rapport with people wherever they are in the country or the world. And so I do think that, you know, there'll be a change in terms of how reps are mapped out. So,
absolutely. And I do think that the named accounts is a good way to go, or with verticals, you know, like maybe you specialize in medical or you specialize in manufacturing or something like that, so that you can really learn your industry, but it's still named accounts within that industry, right? But then you got the industry jargon down, you know which shows to show up at, where your industry, you know, those folks are going to gather and stuff. So I think those are some good ways, you know?
Yeah, I think another interesting trend that we're seeing too is really on the SDR front of One, it's where does SDR sit in marketing or in sales? Yes. And then the second part is, do SDRs round robin to the AEs, or do they sit in pods and work hand in hand on these named accounts? And so I think that's something that we're seeing a change in terms of how companies are driving effectiveness with their SDR teams as well.
Yeah, and I like an account-based approach. So I'm more a fan of having them on a team working with the named accounts together from start to finish and handing it off to customer success and making a really smooth transition, and you know, for the customer, and providing that exceptional customer experience that all of our customers really want.
Exactly. And I think that what that also does in that kind of approach is allow the SDRs to engage with the AEs more and have a kind of a mentorship friendship program that helps them graduate in because there's that more one-to-one, hey, let's tag team getting into this account together. And now you're seeing better team morale because of that too.
Right, right. What are you seeing right now in the marketplace, even with this creative selling that you do, as some of the biggest challenges in just getting people to talk to you today?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a mix of there's a lot of changes in terms of people's behavior in terms of the buying process. So there's a mix of people wanting to maybe self-serve at times versus talk to sales right away. And how do you adapt to that or adapt to their timeframes? I think there's, you know, the shift of, you know, do you invite this prospect to a field event now or is it too soon or not? And so there's, I think, you know, getting back into that mindset is kind of the, as the playbook continues to shift. I think for sellers, it's, there's more and more sales tech tools out there too. So it's, what do you use? How are you getting good at it? Are you using the tool the right way? And so that I think will end up changing the buying process as well too.
You guys do a really good job though of engaging the customer wherever they come into your mm-hmm. sales cycle. You have lots of things where they can kind of do it themselves until they're ready to talk to a sales rep. So I want to commend you on that because I've noticed that. And that is a very important piece right now that many companies haven't quite gotten. We've got Gartner and other research firms telling us, look, B2B buyers want a pretty much a seller-free experience up to a point anyway. And they may be looking at midnight when a seller isn't even available. So what are you providing for them to help them? And you guys have got so much content. You've got videos. You've got all these different ways on the website for them to see, you know, how they can use your tool without ever even talking to anyone. So
exactly. And I think we also try to train some of our SDRs too to be less pushy on setting the meeting and more consultative on sharing information and letting the buyer chime in when they want. And I think it creates a better relationship too, where you're like, hey, here's a recent, you know, podcast, or here's a video, or here's a product tutorial guide, like, and really being, you know, thought leadership first, sales second. And I think that approach has really benefited our growth.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that these customers who are tentative, it's like you mentioned, there's just a lot going on, the way that buying has changed. But inside their own organization, they don't always know how to move through the buy cycle. So mm-hmm. they see something interesting, they want to do it, and then they have to go figure out at their own company, well, how do we even buy something like this? Yeah. We've never bought this before. Mm-hmm. So I think salespeople just need to be more cognizant of that.
Yeah.
And also be the guide and say, hey, in other companies like yours, typically, it has to, you know, marketing wants to say and sales wants to say. And then, of course, you probably have some procurement people or whatever. So you kind of guide them and help them know what's going to happen at their own company in order to get the sale done.
Exactly. And I think for especially in the enterprise sales, where you even have a longer process with more parties involved.
Yes.
I think the best salespeople are creating these mutual action plans. So it's even documented what's next, what's the to-do list. You know, and like you said, sharing what that we learned at the last enterprise to this enterprise, getting everyone on the same page and not making assumptions. Because I think making assumptions or can hurt forecasting and can hurt, you know, and can create, you know, surprises. And no one in sales wants a surprise when you're getting close to the finish line.
No, no surprises, right? No. We need good forecasting. And it's funny that you mentioned that mutual action plans, or some people call them MAPs. I love that. I've been doing it for years. I didn't ever call it that. I didn't know what it was way back in the 90s when I was selling. But what I knew is that if I told the customer exactly what to expect and when to expect it, what they would need to do, what I would need to do to keep it moving, that it would keep moving. And if I got, of course, also the right people involved and had this really nice mapped out plan for everybody to follow, it's just comfortable for everybody when you do that. So I'm glad to hear your team's doing that. I think it really helps us forecast better too, because salespeople don't have this pie in the sky idea. They're showing you, look, I've mapped this out with the customer. They agreed to it. We're moving forward.
Exactly. Yes. And I think that that's where you really, with an enablement organization, a sales enablement organization and a strong sales ops team, you can have the resources around the sales reps to really make sure that everyone's following that same process too. So you don't have, again, surprises with one rep doing something different than the next. And I think that's, again, where sales training comes in too. And if you can get the team trained on the same methodology too, now you're the whole team is running in tandem. And again, I think forecasting when you're at our stage is very important. In the early days, maybe you can get away with no forecasting and just trying to find customers. But as you grow, forecasting becomes very crucial to headcount planning, to investors, to everything else.
Absolutely. Now you've got this round of funding, which is awesome. Yeah. Are you going to be growing sales with that? And how, you know, in the next, 12 months or so, how much bigger is your sales organization going to get?
Yeah. So 100% we're growing sales with that. So we'll be investing a lot in our headcount for the sales team and then all the other teams that support it, whether it's the customer success and post-customer teams, whether it's, I think with that, it's kind of a hiring puzzle where then you need more finance people, you need more operations people, you need more product people. So it's not as easy as just saying, hey, we'll add a few more salespeople. So the whole organization will continue to grow. Both domestically here in the US, and then we're expanding globally even more. So we've supported our customers already through international operations, and we have warehouses globally. And now we're focused more on go-to-market teams globally as well.
Exciting times. So as we wind up here, what are a couple of things that you would just like to make sure the CEOs listening take away from this conversation that we've been having?
Yeah. So I think one is get in the trenches with the team. I'm lucky that I have a sales background. If you have a product background, an engineering background, get in and show face time. And I think that that's a really helpful way to build trust in the sales organization and really kind of lower the barriers for them in the future to reach out to you and make that a more comfortable collaboration. So I'd say that's number one. I'd say number two is have fun with it, especially in the early days. We had a lot of fun little spiffs, and we still do. Where even I'm kind of famous for like making these side bets with my sales team. Like, hey, if you go above your quota to this, or if you get a meeting with this company, I'll bet you a fishing trip or a this or that. So I think it's how do you create some more fun in the sales process? And then I think the third is embrace technology. There's lots of sales tech tools out there. And how do you get good, whether you're a sales leader and you want to empower the team, or whether you're a salesperson, how do you, really get good at learning what all the sales tech is and use it to your competitive advantage?
Wonderful. Well, Chris, I cannot thank you enough for coming on the show today. I really appreciate it. It's been so much fun. You know how much I love Sendoso, and I've been watching you guys grow. Can't wait to see what's coming next. So thank you so much for being here and sharing with us today.
Yeah, thank you so much, Alice, for having me.
Thanks for tuning in to Sales Talk for CEOs. You can find me at alicehyman.com. Be sure and connect with me on LinkedIn and let me know that you heard the show. If you found value in today's episode, please subscribe, write a review, and share the show with another CEO.